Welcome to The Firing Line with Rick Travis, Legislative Director of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. The Firing Line radio show is brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association, CCW Safe, and Turner's Outdoorsman. And now, here's your host, Rick Travis.
Good afternoon, patriots of the Inland Empire and all of Southern California. I'm Rick Travis, the Legislative Director for the California Rifle and Pistol Association, and welcome to CRPA's Firing Line Radio. Today's show is wonderful. Why? Because I'm on it? Nope. I'm so not ready for radio, that's why I talk on it and you don't see me. But the reason it's a great day is because this week, one of the most arguably egregious bills to come from Senator Anthony Portantino, Senate Bill 1160, the mandatory registration of every gun owner in this state, it died, folks. It's gone. It's not coming back this session. It's buried. Yes, that's right. Do not slam on the brakes, jumping up and down for joy on the person in front of you. But yes, this is a time to be very, very happy. Now, that bill was a gut and amend, which meant that they took the bill and they gut amended it to another firearms bill. Do not lose a lot. That bill will actually now be dealing with raising the fines on when you're caught illegally open carry in the state of California. So we are looking at that. We're talking to the author's staff, and we'll have updates on the bill. But for now, 1160, mandatory firearms registration, is dead. Now, why am I not jumping up and down? Well, I'm not jumping up and down because there's still four more bills in that bill package that my guest today and I have been working on to defeat because they help reinforce the ideas of 1160 as originally drafted. And so those four bills are still going to be moving through. We're still fighting the every gun owner package. So, but we took out the big one, and now we're going to take out all the things that support that concept. And that includes the mandatory storage of your firearms, firearm safes that have to be approved by the state. That includes turning the FFC, which is your firearm safety certificate, into a gun license. We're fighting that. And finally, we're fighting turning the insurance agencies and the California Department of Insurance into being a quasi police force of the legislature to find out how many firearms you have and where you have them. So those four bills are still out there. We're still going to be fighting them. But we also had another incredible victory. So today we're going to kind of pivot the show to focus more on the area of hunting and conservation. And nobody better than to be saddled up with me today than my good friend and colleague and the guy that we fight together side by side throughout the Capitol and the state on your hunting and conservation rights, Bill Gaines of Gaines Associates. Welcome, Bill.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm looking forward to this.
So, Bill, Catalina has sucked up our lives since last year.
Right.
Any we had of going fishing, hunting, or doing anything that we fight for other people to do seemed to be heavily impacted by this battlefield. And, you know, during this last week, we got wind that the city manager had been working to figure out what to do with the Catalina Island Conservancy and others, and that equaled a meeting that I just want to first thank the people that responded to the emergency messaging you sent out on Monday, that we sent out on Monday, because according to the city council, even when we talked to them yesterday, they got landslided with public outcry. And I think it's important that our people know that when we say, hey, use these alert systems, these one-click politics, et cetera, it has an impact.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny to get 20 or 25 conservation organizations, you know, on a letter of opposition or support or engaged in an issue like Catalina. It's another thing when you can get every single one of their members to weigh in as well, because as you know as much as I do, Rick, I mean, you know, legislators at the Capitol, decision makers, whether they be on the Fish and Game Commission, whatever, the people in California that determine wildlife policy, firearm policy, and so on and so forth, their number one goal isn't to pass a gun bill. It's to be reelected, right? And when they hear from their constituents, not from, you know, Bill Gaines, who may live in a different district, but when they hear from their constituents that they either support or adamantly oppose something, that makes a difference. So getting the grassroots, getting them more engaged can have a phenomenal impact on decision makers. And the Catalina decision with the Avalon City Council a couple of days ago is a proof to that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that people got to realize, too, is the impact economically. I mean, so many people called in and said, if you go through with this, we're not visiting the island. That has an economic impact. And I think we could see that because Supervisor Hahn sent staff there to tell them exactly why she was not in support, why she was part of the opposition. And I also think that people need to realize that grassroots effort includes, we're now over 120,000 signatures between two petitions of people saying no. And those are global petitions. Those things have literally wrapped the earth, which for those of you in California who think people don't care about this state, that's not the case at all. We got people literally on every continent but Antarctica. And I'm not sure how much of our mail they get, but you know, everybody else has jumped in on this and have written some pretty interesting letters that show a lot of compassion for the island and for the deer on the island. And I think that's telling.
You know, Rick, yeah, this is an issue that's gotten not only national but international attention, as you mentioned. I mean, the eyes are on Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, Chuck Bonham. They're on Governor Newsom. It's like, how are they going to handle this request by the Conservancy to eradicate all the deer on the island? Like you said, this has engulfed our lives since like September of last year, right? And we're really fighting a war on this thing. The Avalon City Council decision on just a couple nights ago, it was a Tuesday night, I guess, you know, was a victory. That was one battle. Right. But this war is still being fought. What their decision to reject the Conservancy's compromise, if you will, on Tuesday complicates things for the Conservancy because it's going to really restrict their ability to deal with the deer that are within Avalon. Doesn't impact the deer that are outside of Avalon. So I think it's important for your listeners to know that this was one battle. In a bigger war, the department can certainly still approve that scientific collection permit if they want to. I mean, we're not out of the woods yet on this thing, for sure. But Tuesday night's decision by the city council was a huge win for us. Make no mistake about that.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues that we need to make sure people understand, this is something I want to talk about, is, you know, the compromise that was put forward had to deal with hunting, had to deal with some stuff that some people might be like, wow. But, you know, one of the conversations you and I had, I think it's important for people to understand, is you don't want to go for one final hunting season and then violate your central argument. The central argument you and I have been making against the antis, a lot of the shenanigans that they pull up at the Capitol and Game Commission meetings and with the department and other agencies is, number one, follow the North American model for conservation. And the North American model, folks, Bill and I will both tell you, is unique to this country and Canada. Lesser so, I would say, Mexico, but definitely to Canada and the United States. And it is being used around the world because it's the model that has been proven to not just stop the destruction of wildlife, but it also has the greatest success rate of bringing wildlife not on just back, but in some cases, like with waterfowl, back to even more than they were originally when Europeans first got here. So, I mean, I think there's some really big success rates of pointing up why the science behind that model works. And yet there seems to be an attitude, not just in California, but even in some other states here in the West, to ignore that model. And I think you and I holding the line along with our colleagues is extremely important. And we got to get the public to understand that model.
There's no question about that. I was talking to somebody about the North American model of conservation a couple of days ago that is an avid hunter. They didn't even know what it was. You know, so I think a little more education on our part when we have a chance to educate those who care about the same things that we care about how that model is, what it is, how it works and so forth, so that they can help spread the word on that as well to a lot of the people that are live in urban areas, have no exposure to hunting or wildlife management based on science and so forth.
Yeah, I think just real quickly, folks, it has seven, what are called the seven pillars or principles. The first one is wildlife resources are conserved and held in trust for all citizens. The second is commerce and dead wildlife is eliminated. The third is wildlife is allocated according to democratic rule of law. Wildlife may only be killed for a legitimate, non-frivolous purpose. Wildlife is an international resource. Every person has an equal opportunity under law to participate in hunting and fishing. And seven, scientific management is the proper means for wildlife conservation. These are the seven principles that Bill and I live under, not just as one of you that goes out and engages in the outdoor sports, but also, this is what we're doing with different fish and wildlife agencies nationwide, but especially here in California, to make sure that we hold those departments to this model. We don't make judgments of, well, this is key or this species outweighs that species. We look at every ecosystem and use the science to balance it. And folks, that's what we're going to be talking about today, is using that science. So we're going to come up here after the break, and we're going to be looking at Catalina and the science, or the lack thereof. We'll be back on Firing Line Radio.
Hi folks, Rick Travis. If you're a concealed handgun carrier and have a firearm to defend your home, you need to have CCW Safe on your side. CCW Safe is your defense if you're forced to use your firearm for self-defense or the protection of a loved one. CCW Safe provides and pays 100% upfront defense funds for high-quality attorneys, expert witnesses, and investigators you need following a critical incident with no reimbursement. And they do it all for one flat yearly fee starting at $179 a year. CCW Safe has permit and non-permit plans to protect California residents in this state and while traveling across the country. So check out their new ultimate plan with no caps on criminal and civil defense, $1 million for bond coverage, a dedicated $1 million of civil liability, and many other benefits. You defend your life, CCW Safe will defend your freedom and financial future. In California, CCW Safe has got you covered. So join now at ccwsafe.com.
The California Rifle and Pistol Association has worked tirelessly for 150 years to promote your rights to self-protection, shooting sports, firearms collecting, hunting, conservation, and every aspect of your Second Amendment rights. CRPA works tirelessly and relentlessly to defend the civil and constitutional rights of individuals to choose to responsibly own and use firearms. Every dollar that CRPA receives from its members and donors stays and works in California to support your hunting and Second Amendment rights and the fight against politicians, elitists, and bureaucrats who would deprive individuals of those rights. Join the California Rifle and Pistol Association today at crpa.org. That's crpa.org.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by Turner's Outdoorsman.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio. Folks, if you haven't joined the CRPA, do so now. Go to crpa.org and join. And along with joining that, folks, if you're a hunter and you're listening to today's show, I know sometimes you're like, oh, $35, $45 to join this organization, that organization. But I'm going to tell you, as our guest today, Bill Gaines of Gaines & Associates, will tell you, those organizations do incredible work in the field. For the little bit amount of money you're giving, especially when some of them give you a hat, a shirt, or a pocket knife or something else, they really stretch those dollars, folks. They're not out there buying mansions or suits or flying jets or going to different places like you may have heard of some organizations. These people are actually putting the money on the ground helping wildlife. And that work is constantly noticed, not on just in this state, but nationwide. Money to spend this state gets pulled together and gets used in this state. And I see it over and over again. In fact, Bill and I have been on many different trips with the Game Commission witnessing how those dollars that you donate through those organizations are coupled with federal dollars and state dollars to really improve wildlife and conservation. That's so important. And that's important because it goes with that seventh pillar of the North American model wildlife conservation, scientific management, as being the proper means for wildlife conservation. And so, Bill, let's talk about Catalina. You know, it's been an amazing journey going through this fight for it, because you realize how department policy sometimes just doesn't flat out make sense. And I'll throw a bone out to you to get this conversation started, but you know, the deer had been there almost 100 years. And we've been told over and over, you and I, oh, they're invasive species. They're not special because they've lived on the island. But then you'll hear them say, well, we can't move them to another place because they're adapted so much to the island that they're not like the other deer on the mainland. And then you'll hear, oh, well, the goats were there on San Clemente Island only 50 years, and they were now classified as a separate subspecies and needed to be protected from the Marine Corps when they were trying to get them off the island. And it's like, okay, so 50 years if you're a pig on San Clemente Island, you're special. 100 years if you're a deer, you're special when it's appropriate to be special, but not special. And I think that's what a lot of people don't see is that's the mess that you and I have to work in all the time.
Yeah, we sure do. It's you're looking for logic, Rick, where there is none, right? You know, it's just amazing. And the department on this one has been really amazing. you know, we have always said live by the science, die by the science. And as you mentioned, you know, in the earlier segment, I mean, science has to drive wildlife management policy. Cannot base it on emotions. You can't base it on anything but science if you want to do what's in the best interest of the wildlife, right? You know, and in this case, with the Catalina Conservancy's proposal, you know, to eradicate those deer that have been there over 100 years, you know, there's zero science behind that. I mean, you know, we met with the Conservancy way back when this was put back. This has been kicking around for several years, for a few decades, right? You know, but when it really raised its ugly head again, most recently, was back September timeframe. Mm-hmm. You know, and it kicked off for me when I got a call from the Conservancy. They wanted to meet. So we set up a Zoom. I brought in a couple of independent scientists that were experts in this arena. And the Cal Deer Association, who, you know, that I work with, had them on the call because they're adamantly opposed to this for obvious reasons. You know, and so we listened to an hour presentation given by the Conservancy where they laid out what they called their science and why they're confident and everything else. And the first thing we said is, we don't see the science. And then we called for a follow-up study that did provide some legitimate science on whether deer were impacting the wildlife or the native plants there or not, right? And they said, nope, we've got the science, don't need to. Well, follow-up conversations with the two independent scientists that we had on that Zoom were like, they got zero science, right? But what surprises me with the department on this one, they peer review or study the heck out of everything. They're not doing that on this issue. So that's a real head scratcher, and I'm not sure why that's the case.
Yeah, I think it's also important to realize that the department, not just 5 years ago, 10 years ago, but going back 30 years, because as you said, the Conservancy, this isn't a new idea. They're just more aggressive than they've ever been before with it, have been denied various permits to go after the deer because there was no science. So you can't blame it, oh, this is just one science manager and one administration. No, this is multiple managers, multiple administrations have told them multiple times, this is the science you want to do. In fact, you know, Bill, you and I have looked at some of the documents. It's literally laid out like, hey, if you want this considered, you need to do A, B, C, D, E, F. And to date, they haven't done it, which is why it's gotten as far as it's gotten with the department has really, like you said, it's been a head scratcher because you look at it and say, this isn't following the science. It's not following the rules. It's not following the regulations. And I want to apologize to all of you as listeners. What we're talking about is there are a couple of plants that the Catalina Island Conservancy is concerned about. That is their side of the story. And they feel that deer are an issue and that the only solution would be to basically where they stand right now is to sterilize the deer herd that is closest to Avalon. So they would die out in 2 to 8 years. And be no more. And the rest of deer is to hunt them down from currently from an aerial helicopter and shoot them. And just so you guys know, I'm not going to go into graphic details in case kids are there. But if you're hunting a deer, 98.9% of the time, I think it's safe to say it's a one shot and it's over. Sometimes you have to follow up with a second shot. the standards throughout all the records, all the stats globally, say when they do these aerial hunts, including the organization that has been contracted by the conservancy, it's between 8 and 9 shots, and it's not a guarantee that the animal's dying right away. Often they're left there to suffer for a couple of hours or more. And so, folks, this is not and then they're just going to leave the meat out in the field. So there are several issues, such as wanton waste, which is illegal in this state, the idea that people with AR-15s are going to be flying around on an island shooting deer doesn't sit well with a lot of people within the state, and for good reason. And I think what's interesting is if you look at, you know, Bill, you can say, well, Bill, you represent Cal Deer. This makes sense. Rick, you represent California Rifle Pistol Association. But had I came and told you folks that, you know what, this is going to be such an egregious thing by the Catalina Island Conservancy that you know who's going to join Bill and I? The SPCA, Humane Society, and a whole slew of other groups that normally don't sit with you and I, Bill, on the same side of the table, who have all said, and I quote, have said, hunting is a good management tool. But even that has been made a joke by the Conservancy this week. Because, Bill, just because you add more tags doesn't improve hunter success rates. You have to put more concessions, which would be like guides in the field, to up that. Because otherwise, you're just building a number that's never going to happen.
Well, it's all part of the Conservancy's, quote, compromise, unquote, package that they brought to the Avalon City Council, you know, hoping to get things moving in Avalon. And, you know, the sterilization of the deer within the city limits, that was part of their compromise proposal. Their original proposal, which is now back on the table since the Conservancy or the Avalon City Council, you know, denied the compromise, is that they're going to net and bolt those deer. They're going to bait them, haul them out of the city and bolt them like they would cattle in a slaughterhouse. I mean, that was the original proposal. That technically is currently the proposal, you know, and back on, you know, the aerial gunning of the deer that are outside of Avalon. Like you say, if you and I are out there hunting, we see a single deer. If we decide to take it, we focus on that animal. That helicopter is going to be buzzing along. They're going to be rattling off with automatic gunfire, right? It's going to keep moving. So, if, like you say, if they just wing one of those deer, they're, you know, the helicopter's a mile away. They're not going to know what's going on with them. So there's going to be a lot of suffering. I mean, it's just absolutely inhumane what they're proposing to do, and the science doesn't support it in any way.
Yeah, not to mention that there could be, as you would say in the military, you could end up with some other casualties that were not the intended targets, such as the island fox and others when they're doing that aerial shooting. So, yeah, this is very, very tragic. And, folks, we're focused on this fight because, again, this is a great example of science not being used, because we have went out there, we have flown drone footage over what they call an exclosure, which is an area designed to keep wildlife out to see how the plant life does inside versus outside. That, and we can tell you right now, there is no demonstrable difference. There is nothing to prove that the deer have done any of the things they're being accused of. So it's like the Conservancy has already put the deer up on trial, convicted them without ever having their scientific day in court. And that's not the way we run things here. And, you know, that goes back to, you know, the third principle, which is wildlife is allocated according to the democratic rule of law. You are supposed to look at this democratically. That's not being done in this case. It is being done very heavy-handed, and the idea that Conservancy would do it. But we're going to talk in our next segment about, you know, this could be a one-off example. Okay, so the department and people aren't looking at the science, but this could just be a weird one-off kind of thing, Rick. Why are you so concerned about it? And in this next segment, we're going to be talking about why we're so concerned about it, because some things are out of control in this state. And we need to look at that. You need to be informed of that so you can make the right decisions at the vote. We'll be back on Fine Line Radio.
Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one hunting, fishing, and shooting sports retailer since 1971, now has 33 locations across California and one in Tucson, Arizona. Turner's is your one-stop shop for all your shooting, sports, and fishing tackle needs. They offer a full selection and unmatched prices on firearms, ammunition, gun safes, shooting accessories, archery equipment, and fishing tackle. Visit Turner's.com now and sign up for the Turner's Discount Club for free and get their weekly ads and members-only specials sent directly to your inbox. Turner's is a proud supporter of the fight to protect your rights in their continued support of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. For more information and to sign up for Turner's Discount Club or to shop online, visit turners.com.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio. I'm your host, Rick Travis, the Legislative Director for the California Rifle Pistol Association. And with me today is Bill Gaines of Gaines and Associates, who represents many groups like the California Deer Association and others up and down the state working for your hunting and conservation rights. And for those of you listening that are like, well, I don't hunt. Yeah, that second part, conservation. We do that for you. That is so that when you go to the woods, you can see, or the desert, or any of the buried environmental areas in California, which we're so blessed to have in the state. We're not a state that just has one or two environments. We have it all. And we sometimes probably take that for granted because we drive through it all and don't recognize it. But we fight for your rights to go hiking, fishing, bird watching, et cetera, to engage this wildlife. And Bill, I want to kind of move away from Catalina and start to talk about something that you and I have watched unfold over the last almost going on 12 years, where it really started to take hold. And that is the apex predator. And folks, apex predators are the predators at the top. And I'm going to say this. I've harped on this in numerous articles and interviews. Apex predators in California for the last, wait for it, 30,000 years now, according to the University of San Diego and San Diego State University anthropology departments, from what they found here, as well as Berkeley. There have been humans here for at least 30,000 years now in California. Apex predators include humans. So removing humans is to remove an apex predator. Bears. It includes a whole slew of animals that aren't around anymore, but it still includes wolves, cougars, bobcats, and lots of other predators. They're top of the food chain on land. There's other ones in the water. We're just going to talk about the land ones right now. We had a really good friend, a colleague of ours that worked for the Department of Fish and Wildlife by the name of Mark Kenyon. He now is up in the Great Lakes working, but one of the top bear biologists literally on the planet. And Mark Kenyon, right after Bill, you'll remember the Bill, but it was when we lost the right to use dogs in bear hunting. You worked passionately on that, Bill, fighting it. It was great to be a colleague by your side when that was going on. But they removed dogs from bear hunting, folks. And Mark Kenyon said dogs helped with bear hunting but never damaged the bears. It was never an issue of the bears were going to be gone because of it. In fact, just the opposite. He said once we removed bears, it wouldn't be that long before we exceed what is known as carrying capacity, which means how many bears the land can sustain without bears changing their behavior, without illnesses being involved, without a lot of human conflict being involved. And that's the thing. It's what can the land and the environment handle? And that number was roughly 28 to 30,000 bears, folks. Now, recently, because of department policies, and I would argue not following the science, because, Bill, for years we haven't had a bear biologist at the department, as you know, that's out of control, Bill, because as the group we work with helped put a white paper together, and the department admitted, how many bears do we have now in California, roughly? What was that number? Huh?
Yeah. You know, now that they're pulling together their management plan, it's actually digging into what the real bear population is in California. It's not the 9,000 that the Humane Society of the United States was claiming that we had when they petitioned the commission a couple of years ago to ban bear hunting. The wildfires have decimated the bear population. They had a million reasons why the population was plummeting, right? Well, no, the department's wrapping up their management plan. We have over 70,000 bears. So basically seven times what the Humane Society was calling for. And what did you just say the carrying capacity of the state was, Rick?
Oh, 28 to 30,000. So we're well over two times.
Which is why That's why we have bears in swimming pools in Los Angeles. We have them, you know, in habitat where they've never been before because the young bears are being pushed out by the older bears, right? And the other thing is the ecosystem doesn't balance itself anymore. We have done so much segregation of habitat. We've broken up habitat corridors, habitat connectivity, the roads, cities, and so on and so forth. So that it doesn't stay in equilibrium like it used to, right? So we did a study a few years ago on the number of deer that bears take, even though mountain lions get the most of the credit. They collared a bunch of fawns. 80% of those fawns were killed by bears, not cats, in the first month of life. So you wonder why our deer populations are struggling? That's just one example.
Right. And I think it's important for all of you to realize, too, we also have bear diseases we didn't used to have. We have Dr. Monk, who is one of the veterinarians for the department, very accomplished guy in studying zoonotical diseases amongst animals. And we have bear encephalitis, which is a sign of your population being overpopulated. Which just points. So again, following the science, which is what Bill and I are doing, this is an issue. But it's not just bears. We tragically, it's a story that Bill and I are both involved with within our jobs personally, but tragically we had a young man lose his life. We hadn't had that for 20 years in this state because of a cougar. And we now know that the cougar population has exploded. We now know that the wolf population is growing very rapidly and spreading out. We have wolves in Northern California, Central California, and Southern California now. And, you know, I get it. To hear a wolf in the wild, it is a beautiful, mesmerizing thing. First one to say it. But here's the problem, folks. We are reintroducing an incredible number and overpopulating predators. And some things that you have to realize, the balance in the ecosystem has always been amongst all the apex predators. And the argument I will give you is, take wolves in Yellowstone. We all know the story, and if you don't, it's easy enough to find out on YouTube or go on Netflix and watch the special. But prior to the wolves being reintroduced into Yellowstone, we had low fish populations, overcrowding, a lot of the river being destroyed by some of the bigger ungulate animals like, you know, moose and elk and deer, et cetera, bison. Once wolves came back in, those populations didn't hang out at the watering hole. You know, that wasn't a smart move anymore. The fish population bounced back and everybody said, see, this is what happens when you balance the apex predators. California is not balancing the apex predators. And as a result, it's like Bill says, we are losing precious wildlife statewide to overkill because we have way too many. And what naturally happens, and there's multiple examples of this, across the country over the last 100 years, which is where this North American model has been proven to be effective. When you allow an explosion of the population of predators like this, folks, you will decimate different species of wildlife to the point of where they now those predators starve in mass starvation. So for any of you saying, oh, this is a good thing, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing on multiple angles. Bill, why do you think the department is so reluctant to see the science?
It's amazing, you know, that emotional decisions that are driven by, you know, urban legislators that know nothing of the North American model of conservation. No, even by some of the department leadership. I mean, you mentioned apex predators, bears, lions, wolves. They're all apex predators. You know, the only predator that can control them is the ultimate apex predator, which is man, right? But well, with bears, we can hunt them, but we can't hunt them effectively. We can't use dogs anymore, right? So their populations are exploited. We can't hunt lions. We can't hunt wolves. Nothing is managing these species. And the bottom line is those populations are going to grow. We can't control them because they won't let us manage them. And then what's going to happen is the wildlife and the rest of the species that they prey on are going to be decimated over time.
And, you know, Bill, you brought up the dog issue, and I'm going to hit on that one really quick. It's interesting. The argument back, like I said, a little over a decade ago to remove dogs from bear hunting was basically like, this is cruel. It's unusual. You know, people shouldn't be using dogs. Folks, again, go back to those universities I talked about, like San Diego State, you know, UC San Diego, Berkeley and stuff. They've been doing studies on wolves. Folks, there is a very compelling argument that is being looked at globally that humans would not be in the situation we're in had it not been literally for wolves coming out in the pack. The dogs you have, I don't care if it's a Chihuahua, a Labrador, an Australian Shepherd, have wolf DNA in them. Folks, wolves and humans have cooperated. Wolves, or as you could say, dogs and humans. We just got a amen from my lab in the background. You know, we've all been working together for literally 30,000 recorded years. That is a part of it. And so, Bill, why do you think with all this science, like it's not just one or two, it's a lot. Bill?
I wasn't sure if you were messing with your dog or not. Well, you know, it's just amazing. It's just that emotions are driving the decisions, right? I mean, we lost the ability to hunt lions back in 1990 with Proposition 117. That was on the general ballot, right? I mean, we can't hunt wolves, right? That decision was made when the Fish and Game Commission made them a special status species when there wasn't even a wolf in the state. Now we've got more than 10 packs in the state, and that was only a few short years ago, right? You know, and bears, like I said, you know, they've taken away our ability to humanely hunt them because we can't hunt with dogs. And, you know, if you're out in the duck blind, you want a humane shot. You want that mallard to be as close as possible, right? Putting bear in a tree, getting a clean, humane shot is the best humane way to harvest a bear.
Amen. And so, folks, again, this is where we're pointing out that the department needs to be held accountable. You need to talk to your local politicians, and you need to look at this reasonably. None of us here want to see wildlife destroyed. We want to see wildlife preserved and it gets stronger and better for future generations. We'll be back on Firing Line Radio.
The California Rifle and Pistol Association has worked tirelessly for 150 years to promote your rights to self-protection, shooting sports, firearms collecting, hunting, conservation, and every aspect of your Second Amendment rights. CRPA works tirelessly and relentlessly to defend the civil and constitutional rights of individuals to choose to responsibly own and use firearms. Every dollar that CRPA receives from its members and donors stays and works in California to support your hunting and Second Amendment rights and the fight against politicians, elitists, and bureaucrats who would deprive individuals of those rights. Join the California Rifle and Pistol Association today at CRPA.org. That's CRPA.org.
Hi, folks. Rick Travis. If you're a concealed handgun carrier and have a firearm to defend your home, you need to have CCW Safe on your side. CCW Safe is your defense if you're forced to use your firearm for self-defense or the protection of a loved one. CCW Safe provides and pays 100% upfront defense funds for high-quality attorneys, expert witnesses, and investigators you need following a critical incident with no reimbursement. And they do it all for one flat yearly fee starting at $179 a year. CCW Safe has permit and non-permit plans to protect California residents in this state and while traveling across the country. So check out their new ultimate plan with no caps on criminal and civil defense, $1 million for bond coverage, a dedicated $1 million of civil liability, and many other benefits. You defend your life, CCW Safe will defend your freedom and financial future. In California, CCW Safe has got you covered. So join now at ccwsafe.com.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by CCW Safe.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio. This is your host, Rick Travis, the legislative director for the California Rifle Pistol Association. Join me today to discuss the science behind hunting and conservation. We've talked about Catalina. We've talked about predators. Is Bill Gaines of Gaines & Associates, my colleague. And Bill, I just want to do a shout out to you and Gaines & Associates for all the hard work you guys do. You're like one of the only other people besides me I know that is up at weird hours all day, all week, all month, all everything. Folks, he does so much work for you. Senate Bill 1163 is part of another long fight that we've had. It started off with Senate Bill 395 back in 2019. And this has to do with folks, and I'm going to say it. Those of you that are listening to this, I'm going to crack the joke. 395 was picked purposely after the highway 395 that goes up the backside, the eastern side of California. And it's because of road kills, literally, when cars hit deer, elk, et cetera, pig, but mostly deer and elk, which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, accounts for, I believe, if not number one, at least the number two cause of death for those animals. It's not hunting. We're not anywhere near those numbers. And folks, what you got to realize is for literally decades, that meat was retrievable by the Highway Patrol, Cal Fire, and other agencies, and often used to supplement the meat at fire departments. And people are like, ooh, gross, roadkill. No, ooh, gross, not. Normally the head of the animals would got hurt. The rest of the meat was perfectly fine. For those of you like, oh, this is so disgusting, tell me that after you go to New York and pay over $200 at the Waldorf Astoria for elk medallions, and then you can come back and tell me how horrible it is to have to eat roadkill. I just want to make the point that this is a valuable resource, and we throw metric tons of this meat away during this incredible budget crisis. That food has been used historically at homeless shelters, battered women's shelters. It's been used for people who are going through cancer treatments, which, by the way, there are numerous longitudinal, meaning longer than 25-year studies, that showed if you're eating game meat, folks, and fighting cancer, that improves your odds of surviving by almost 40% nationwide in multiple types of cancer. So we're not talking about trash. We're talking about a valuable resource. Bill, what happened after we got 395 passed, which said, yes, we could return to a test model to do this?
Let me give you a bit more ground for our listeners on this. You know, deer hunters in California, Rick, take about 25,000 deer a year total statewide. That's a lot of deer, right? But roadkill of deer, if you will, according to the UC Davis World Ecology Center, which are the experts in the state on what's happening out there on our roadways when it comes to wildlife and road, they say it could be as many as 100,000 deer are hit each year, right? And you layer on top of that the take from bears and lions and all the rest of stuff. It's no wonder that our deer populations are struggling here in California. You know, but Senate Bill 395, which we, you know, sponsored back in 395, and Gaines Associates and CRPA worked hand in hand to pass that legislation, was signed into law. What it would have done is would have required the department to create a cell phone app so people similar to the Waze app that a lot of your listeners use could log in where they see wildlife roadkill on the roadways, right? And the GPS on your phone and so forth will tell the department where this data would go, exactly where that roadkill was. The second thing it would do would be allow for salvage permits to be got immediately, if you will, electronically by somebody who wanted to harvest or salvage a deer or elk or other big game that was on the roadway that was a fresh kill, that the meat was still edible, right? You know, that bill was signed into law, but it was required a special appropriation by the state legislature to fund the department's efforts to create that program and the Fish and Game Commission's efforts to promulgate the regulations to govern these roadkill salvage, if you will. We fought like crazy, as you know, Rick, for 3 years to get that appropriation. Could not get it. We came back this year with the help of Senator Brian Dawley with Senate Bill 1163, which basically puts the funding in a separate bill. It updates the timelines that were called out for the pilot program and promulgation of the regs that were laid out in 395, and it puts the funding back in so that this program can get off the ground. And Rick, just so your listeners know, every other Western state already has this program. Oregon, Washington, Idaho, they all have this program already. They all have the roadkill salvage program in place. They all have the cell phone app in place. They're already doing it. And California, who's the technical leaders, you know, we got the Silicon Valley, we got everything here. We're way behind on this, and we haven't implemented it here in California. When we're losing 100,000 deer a year, now they're spending $20 to $80 million on building wildlife crossings statewide to provide habitat connectivity and to connect habitat corridors, which we strongly, strongly support. But it's garbage in, garbage out on where you're going to build those multi-million-dollar structures if you don't have good data. UC Davis's Road Ecology Center says we don't have good data. This program with the cell phone app would provide robust data that would guide the state on where to place these wildlife crossings, and it would save millions of wildlife big and small, you know, for a long time into the future. But we got to get the program in place. That's what Senate Bill 1163 would do.
Yeah, and I think this is really important because, once again, it demonstrates we're pushing the science. We're pushing it to make sure we have wildlife for the future. And not, you know, everybody wants to always say, oh, you guys do that for hunting. No, we're not doing it just for hunting. Hunting's a byproduct. What we're doing it for is so this wildlife is for future generations. You know, Bill and I aren't looking about being around the next 100 years. We've already served our time on this planet. This is about the next generation. You know, we're looking at our great-grandkids that haven't even been born yet. That's what we're trying to prepare for. So, folks, this is really important for you to understand. This is people that are looking at the science. We're not making off emotion. We all have wildlife that just makes us feel very close to creation and nature and everything else. But we are looking at balancing that across the board. So if somebody really loves a frog, well, what are we doing with that in the ecosystem to make sure those frogs are there? If people like deer, bears, whatever it is, we're trying to balance it across. And when it gets imbalanced, that's where we should be stepping in and trying to make sure that's not done. A lot of this stuff, Bill, that you mentioned, I call Band-Aid legislation. You know, it looks really good, a wildlife corridor. Oh, that's a Band-Aid. Because if you don't have the science, as you pointed out, you're just spending a bunch of taxpayer money and you don't know if it's going to work. You know, I think of there's one of those corridors that's, as I'm coming down the coast, and there are homeless people living on that, which means the wildlife isn't going to cross it. And I doubt seriously that wildlife were really using it that much because we had no idea when it was built. It just seemed to be like, well, this is a good place to do it. Well, that's not always a good place to do it. And so I think that's so important. Folks, we have touched on just a few, literally a small portion of what is going on in the fight for conservation. Though in these final moments, let the folks know, like, how hard is this fight?
Oh, it's an uphill battle. And when it comes to the fight, you know, for basing wildlife management on science, California is the tip of the spear on those things. I mean, decisions that are made here, especially bad decisions that are made here, which often happens in the wildlife management realm, quickly spread eastward to other states, right? It's incumbent upon us not only for the long-term health of our wildlife populations in this state, but across the nation to make decisions based on science. And when you have decision makers that come out of the urban areas that know nothing about wildlife management, they know nothing about the role of hunting in the North American model of wildlife conservation, and they want to make decisions based on emotions, like, you know, what do we do with lions? What do we do with bears? What do we do with what? I mean, you've got to make those decisions based on science. And when it comes to placing wildlife crossings, for example, you have to make those decisions based on science as well. If we care about the future of hunting in California, if we care about wildlife conservation, we care about science. One quick note, every single wildlife conservation organization I represent, sure, their membership is mostly hunters, but their number one goal is the health of the species. And if the science, live by the science, die by the science, right? If the science says we shouldn't be hunting deer in this certain zone because populations are too stressed, then we support that closure in that zone. We've proven that time and time over and over again. Science comes first. Hunting comes second only if we have sustainable populations.
Bill, I think that's important. And the last thing I will close out on this is, folks, the channel between Los Angeles and Orange County out to Catalina is roughly 22 to 26 miles, depending where you're leaving. But the difference in children is amazing. The kids on the island have a great appreciation for wildlife and for deer. What was interesting this week was I got a chance to go to a couple schools here in Orange County, and none of the kids in the fourth grade had ever seen a deer at a zoo or in the wild and didn't even know really what a deer looked like. That is how disconnected the urban area is, which is why so many people don't understand why this is so precious. So one of my first challenges to y'all, get out in the wilderness, take the kids, the grandkids, the neighbor kids, all the kids, and let them see nature for themselves so they can make great management decisions. And as always, be safe, shoot straight, and fight back for your rights with CRPA on CRPA's Fire Mind Radio.
The Firing Line Radio Show has been brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association, CCW Safe, and Turner's Outdoorsman. Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one hunting, fishing, and shooting sports retailer since 1971, now has 33 locations across California and one in Tucson, Arizona. Turner's is your one-stop shop for all your shooting, sports, and fishing tackle needs. They offer a full selection and unmatched prices on firearms, ammunition, gun safes, shooting accessories, archery equipment, and fishing tackle. Visit Turner's.com now and sign up for the Turner's Discount Club for free and get their weekly ads and members-only specials sent directly to your inbox. Turner's is a proud supporter of the fight to protect your rights in their continued support of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. For more information and to sign up for Turner's Discount Club or to shop online, visit Turner's.com.
AM 590, The Answer.